Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
We are joined here today with Robin Comey, who represents the beautiful area of Branford, Connecticut. Representative Comey, you have done a lot of work with us in the past few weeks talking about mental health. You've joined us in our What You Don't See campaign. You joined us at What's Real in Education. So, you know, you're on our MVP list, so it makes sense to have you here today talking about important issues on our podcast. So we're really happy to have you, and we look forward to kind of diving into some of the issues I think that you guys are really cultivating around mental health. I think that seems to be the key benchmark issue in the sessions.
Yeah, I was wondering to know a little bit more about House Bill 5001, your thoughts on it, where it stands right now, some ideas that you have of how it can move forward, and what you might need from teachers to help us get some very important things for our kids in schools.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. Yeah, I have been hanging around with you guys for a couple of weeks. It's been fun. I actually was driving home listening to your podcast, of course.
Thank you.
Yesterday night, and I thought to myself, maybe I should try to be a substitute teacher just to see what it's like in the classroom.
Wouldn't hurt. I actually think you're really onto something. I think people don't necessarily understand what the day-to-day is like. They understand the purpose of education. They know that they drop kids off and they have an experience and they learn stuff and they have social experiences, but they don't really know what the day-to-day looks like.
Right, because I go home and I've got my two kids and a teenager, so there's a lot of drama, and I can't imagine having 25 of those problems to solve each day. So I want to thank you, first of all, for everything that you guys do, both for CEA and for our kids, and everyone who's listening, for that matter.
So let's talk about this House Bill 5001, sure. and sort of what has been the conversation in the legislature around mental health.
Sure. So a few months. So I do sit on the Children's Committee and feel really fortunate about that. And we've been working on these issues for years, for as long as I've been there. I'm going on the end of my second term. And one of the things that we've been focused on is the safety of children, right? Mm-hmm. So, and how secure they feel, how safe they feel. So a few months ago, I was talking to the chair, Rep. Linehan, and she said, this is the year that we're going to do it. This is our whole focus this year, and leadership has told us that they're going to support us entirely, is to focus on the mental health and well-being of Connecticut's youth and the families. So we are prioritizing that. We have a lot of folks that, you know, really find that this is in their wheelhouse. They see what their kids have been going through the pandemic the past couple of years. They're looking at it through their eyes, and sort of everybody's got their new glasses on, I think.
Well, it started to feel more personal, right? Like, because kids who, one of the things we saw in the pandemic is students that maybe who weren't having these kind of experiences or feelings before started to now feel anxious and depressed or concerned. Or so all of a sudden we had a whole new host of people who are entering the mental health conversation.
Right. And as parents, as legislators also, we were sharing these stories with each other, and we were saying, well, what can we do, right? We're problem solvers over there in the building, and we want to look at how to improve things. So that's what we're really focusing on this year. And House Bill 5001, which is called An Act Concerning Children's Mental Health, is really a comprehensive proposal encompassing the schools, healthcare settings, insurance eligibility, how we look at screening tools and use them effectively, and other things. So these proposals, combined with a couple of other proposals, we always have a competing proposal in the Senate, and we take the bits and pieces and best parts of all of them.
I so appreciate this push to really focus on our students' mental health and well-being, because we know that healthy students, whether they're physically healthy, emotionally healthy, really do learn better when they are available for learning and when they feel confident and trusting and that we're in places that allow for students to learn and grow in a safe way. So I can't thank the legislature enough for really making this a focus. But I do think there are areas where we would love to see just a little bit more information about how we can construct our schools so that we're looking at caseloads and service providers, and all of those bodies will certainly help our students. There are other little ways that we don't necessarily think about that impact our students' mental health. Like I know that there are, yourself included, members who are thinking about recess, day-based instruction, kind of focused on in the curriculum, especially in our younger grades, looking at who are leading our buildings, our experienced administrators, really making sure that the people who are leading our buildings are mindful, experienced, and knowledgeable about how to care for each situation when there is a child in crisis or a family in crisis. You know, how do we really navigate those pathways? I think that this is a really great start, and I'm looking forward to watching this bill grow throughout the session to really incorporate a lot of important things.
Really hard work. I mean, there's so many pieces of it, right? And we can take care of our children who are the focus of this bill, but you as teachers are the real caregivers. And a lot of in school is where a lot of the issues that our children are facing are uncovered by you and your colleagues. I mean, 1 in 5 American children is experiencing a mental health issue such as depression or anxiety.
Which is really key. That is a great statistic to bring forward, because one of the challenges we're dealing with is the low representation of counselors, social workers, and psychologists. You know, when we look at ratios of 1 to 450 as a access point for our students, and you recognize that 20% of your students are requiring services, that means if you apply that 20% to, I'm going to do a little math here because that's what I like to do.
It's going to make me nervous.
Sorry, Jocelyn.
It's okay.
So if we go to a 1 in 450 as a ratio, and you say 20% of that caseload is going to need services, you're talking about 90 students being served by one adult. And that's just not feasible. Not in a way that constructive and preventative. It becomes triage and crisis management, which isn't the way that the schools want to operate. They want to operate on a preventative mindset, which is why it's so critical that as we talk about this, if we're talking about a 20% of our students are facing some kind of mental health stressor along that continuum of mild and disruptive, but not critical, all the way to critical, we have to be looking at this in multiple ways. So making sure that we're preventing as much as dealing with the crisis.
Absolutely. And one of the ways we're doing that is we sort of broke it out into, you know, short term, medium term, and long term.
Right.
And what programs belong in those sorts of buckets, and how can we measure the impact of those programs over time. So I think that you mentioned early childhood, and these issues start very early.
Yeah.
I come from a background of early childhood in my community, and the collaborative that I worked with pre-pandemic, one of my responsibilities was to provide professional development for preschool teachers, daycare teachers, and they were asking 4 years ago, for professional development that would benefit their mental health.
Right.
And I kept saying, no, don't you want, you know, these programs I can bring in from, you know, the smartest people at Yale, and
they're like,
like, no, can you just bring in a yoga instructor? And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And now, right? And now that was before the pandemic. And now we see these, we should have seen the writing on the wall in some of those.
Well, you know, I think that we certainly couldn't possibly agree with you more that pre-pandemic, we started to have conversations about concerns with, you know, acting out and behaviors and things of that. And like, hey, we're not doing enough to help manage these situations. But most of the time we were critiqued for bringing that up, and really a lot of question about our motivation, and we were looking to exclude children. And in fact, a lot of what the conversations we were having before the pandemic were raising the flag on, we're concerned that we're seeing a higher incidence of really kids who are struggling maintaining sort of an emotional equilibrium. And we want to figure out how to help that process along. And to your point, honestly, it can't happen early enough. I'm a high school teacher. You can't wait till 16. to address issues. It's really hard.
Well, and I think something that you bring up in terms of the early childhood is that our early childhood educators are some of our least paid, right? And we often say, you know, oh, well, it's just preschool, which I find to be such a troubling statement because the formative behaviors that you have, your coping skills, your problem solving, initial friendship building, self-advocacy, all of those are formed very early on in children. And so, you know, caring for our early childhood educators, making sure they're supported, compensated appropriately, and given the spaces for kids to have that experience in the early childhood years. We know if you can't afford that daycare setting or that preschool setting, that you might not be getting those experiences as well. So making that a push does also help children's mental health. So it's a big picture.
It is a big picture. And actually, that is what is in SB 2, which was the other bill that I was referring to. And students whose needs are met in those early years are so much more likely to meet their social, emotional, their academic challenges that they're going to face later on, elementary, the middle, the high school, and increasing our investments in the early child programs. I mean, that's, I could talk all day on that issue. I'll come back for another podcast on that. I think our communities as a whole really benefit when we work together to meet the needs of our youngest children as well.
Yeah, and I think we could have conversations about this bill and this issue for hours and hours on end. Unfortunately, we don't have the time in this podcast to do that. But we can't really thank you enough for being an advocate for this issue. It's so important to the success of our students, success of our schools, and we applaud you and your colleagues for taking this on and for moving it hopefully across the finish line.
Yeah, it was subject to our budget appropriations. So well, I think it's got wide support from both the governor's office and appropriations and the committee process.
Yeah, and we're looking, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting session, and I hope that teachers engage and share. I mean, I think one of the things that I think most legislators have been telling us is that the most impactful thing you can do is tell your story, right? Because you only know what somebody tells you in terms of what's going on in schools and what would be helpful. Because I know as an educator, I know what my experience was like, and I know it really, really well. And I understand high school. I understand a more suburban and vibrant, diverse high school. I know exactly what that's like. But I don't know what it's like. So I listen to my preschool teachers and I listen to those people who teach in different environments than I do, because it's so important for us to have a real comprehensive understanding. So, you know, I think that's why I love our What You Don't See campaign, because so much of what goes on in education is unseen. I look at those early childhood, you know, advocates and I go, nobody really knows what their day is like. Nobody really knows how important that work is. And you talk about things like the basic foundational skills like sharing, right? You know, at 16, I'm probably not going to do a great job of teaching a kid how to share. They will have either figured that out or not, and have a whole host of patterns and behaviors that they will have already adopted that we're either going to reinforce one way or another. But at 3, you can be a real influencing force in a child's life and real positive. So I think, you know, there's a lot going on. I hope that, I mean, I'm not going to lie, there's things that aren't in these bills yet that we're, Jocelyn and I are going to lobby for. We are looking at, you know, things like kindergarten start age. One of the things we're worried about in Connecticut is we start really early.
You wrote that in your testimony.
Yes. Yeah. We feel pretty strongly, you know, we've upped the academic rigor in these elementary schools. And when you do that, you set kids up for failure if they're not prepared to do that work. And so putting an age barrier in there that's more appropriate for the academic rigor of the year, I think makes sense. You're going to hear us talk nonstop about this play issue, which is not recess. It's how do we integrate active play learning throughout, you know, particularly in that kindergarten, first and second grade. If you talk to any kindergarten teacher, they're going to look at you and say, play, play. That is the most universal sentiment I've ever heard, is that as we've upped the academic rigor, we've lost some of that social emotional wellness component of learning to get along. And I don't know, you're in the legislature. Would you say learning to get along is a key and important skill set?
Absolutely. It's a much needed tool. I think understanding where everybody's coming from and where your colleagues lie on, where your friends, what they think. I had lunch the other day with someone who just wanted to talk to me about things, and we couldn't have been more opposite in what we were discussing. Neither one of us convinced each other to think the other way. But it's always good to have those open conversations and to be able to respect one another. And I feel like as a legislator, some of that is lost when people don't know who you are and don't have that gut conversation with you. So yes, reach out to your legislator in a positive way.
Right.
With actual suggestions on how to fix things if you think they're broken, or how to make things, make this great state better. Because we all love this state. We love to support our communities, and we're doing this for not that much money. And
no, Connecticut legislators, that's a misguided notion to think that anybody's getting rich off of that job.
Right, and I don't have a car allowance.
Yeah. Any other myths you'd like us to?
Well, I want to add two things before we wrap up. Is that, you know, people do have the misperception that play is just play. You can learn academics through play, which I think is something that's really important. And I think the other thing that I want to end with is that a lot of this bill costs money and is an investment. But I would argue that an investment in our education and our students' mental health and well-being will bring the state farther along in any other capacity. So it is a very worthwhile investment, and an important one, because
kids are always a worthwhile investment.
You know?
Yep. So I always say that our schools ultimately are a centerpiece of not just our communities, but our economic basis. Companies don't want to come in to a state that has school systems that aren't highly functioning. They want thriving, exciting places. That's where their employees want to work. That's where their employees want to come and bring their children. So investments in schools is a sound economic basis for growth for the state of Connecticut. So it's not just that we think it's a good thing to do because it is a good thing to do and because it's right. It yields dividends that are very powerful. And so we want to keep our eye on that outcome, that everybody wins when our schools are healthy and great places to grow.
That's why CBIA was standing next to us at the early childhood press conference that we had. All of a sudden, 4 or 5 years ago, I was standing in front of my Shoreline Chamber of Commerce saying, you guys need to care about early childhood.
Right.
This is why. It's an economic issue. It's a business issue. It's not just a school or a family issue. And they looked at me like I had two heads. And then, you know,
fast forward.
Here we are, standing
absolutely
shoulder to shoulder, making sure that all of our kids' needs are met.
Well, we can't thank you enough for taking the
right
time to really speak with us today, share your information, and to work so hard to make sure that we have healthy, safe, and sophisticated school systems that provide the best for our students and our educators. So thank you so much for your time today. And I really enjoyed this conversation. You're definitely coming back for another podcast.
Yeah, definitely, Robin. We'll see you again soon.
I know, you're way too close. I'm going to come over every week.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at CEA.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.